An ambush blamed on Daesh terrorists have left more than 50 people dead in central Syria. The White House says the militaries of the U.S. and China are not communicating after recent downing of a Chinese balloon in American airspace. As 6 people lost their lives in a new shooting incident in the U.S., this time in a small town in the state of Mississippi. Hello, everyone. Thanks for tuning in World News. In our top story, at least 53 people are killed in an ambush in central Syria, which media has blamed on Daesh terrorists. Syrian official says 46 civilians are among the dead. Victims had gunshot wounds to the head. Other details are sketchy, and there's been no claim of responsibility yet, but the Daesh terrorist group has in the past killed or kidnapped many people in central, northeastern, and eastern areas of Syria. The latest such incident was on Saturday when 16 people were reportedly killed by the terrorists. Remnants of Daesh are still active in parts of the country after their defeat in 2018. The UN believes their group maintains about 10,000 terrorists in the country and neighboring Iraq. Leader of Yemen's Ansarullah movement says U.S., Israel, and their allies have been committing a wide range of crimes against regional countries to stop their development. Abdulmalik al-Houthi says the West creates and nurtures Takfiri terrorists in the region while looting nations' wealth. Houthi added the U.S. also prevents Muslim nations, including Yemen, from acquiring weapons to defend themselves. He said U.S. has also been providing all kinds of support to Israel, which continues to commit acts of aggression against Palestinians on a daily basis. He said U.S. and its allies targeted with sanctions any independent country not living by their standards. Ansarullah leader said U.S. commits these crimes against humanity while claiming to be an advocate of human rights. He said that some Arab states have been colluding with the U.S. to help Israel establish hegemony in the region. Another shooting in the U.S., this time in Mississippi. A gunman goes on a rampage, killing 6 people throughout different locations before being arrested. Carnage took place in a small rural town along the Tennessee-Mississippi border. First, gunman went to a store and shot a man before going to 2 homes and killing 3 people there. Officer found other victims in another location. Shooter was arrested after a car chase. Authorities believe the suspect acted alone and no motive is yet unknown. U.S. has been witnessing major escalation in gun violence. More than 600 mass shootings were recorded throughout the country during 2022. That's why Congress is still reluctant to pass strict gun control regulations. Russia slammed U.S. for playing a direct role in the war with Ukraine. Moscow says Washington is provoking Ukraine to drag the war into Russian territory. Earlier in our news review, we discussed the issue with our guests.
Hello and welcome at News Review, where we look deeper into some of the top stories of the day. On this segment of the program, Russia warns that the U.S. is now directly involved in the war in Ukraine after an American official expressed support for Kiev's attack on Russian annexed Crimea.
Here's one of U.S. Undersecretary of State Victoria Nuland's remarks that Washington supports. Just think about this: Ukraine's strikes against Russian military infrastructure in Crimea. She also considers the demilitarization of the Russian peninsula a practical option. Once again, we are forced to state the United States' involvement in the conflict in Ukraine. They incite the Kiev regime to further escalate and move the war over onto the territory of our country in this way, by direct strikes. This is what we warned about earlier and why we have been forced to start this special military operation.
Zakharova said the U.S. supplies Ukraine with large quantities of weapons, provides intelligence, and participates directly in the planning of combat operations. She said this is because some U.S. officials are dreaming like, quote, crazies of defeating Russia. Earlier, U.S. Undersecretary of State Victoria Nuland had called for Crimea to be demilitarized at a minimum for Ukraine to be safe. Russia annexed Crimea in 2014 after holding a referendum there. Ukraine and its Western allies have refused to recognize the vote. Last month, the Ukrainian president expressed hope for the reconquest of the region. Russia has warned that it would defend Crimea and other Ukrainian regions that it annexed last year. Joining us on this edition of the News Review, we have Johnny Miller, who's joining us from Donetsk. Also, we have Professor of International Human Rights at University of Pittsburgh School of Law, Daniel Kovalik, who's joining us from Pittsburgh. Gentlemen, welcome to the program. First of all, let's start off with Johnny in Donetsk. Johnny, two different aspects. First of all, we want an update from the situation on the ground. Also, if you may walk us through the recent comments made by Russia, warning basically that the U.S. is now directly involved in the war in Ukraine.
Well, yes, on the front lines at the moment, it's still relatively static. Russia making some gains and a lot of talk about a big Russian offensive. Whether that will happen or not, we're not sure. But coming up to the one-year anniversary of Russia's invasion, or the special military operation, as they call it. And so many people are waiting for this Russian offensive, whether it will come or not. But in terms of Victoria Nuland's recent comments, I spent a lot of time in Crimea recently, and one story that's not being covered very much is the fact that the vast majority of people in Crimea, a healthy majority or a vast majority, somewhere between the two, of people in Crimea not only want to be part of Russia, but they describe themselves as Russian. I've spent a lot of time speaking to people on the streets of Crimea. And that's an important story to recognize, that the vast majority of people in Crimea see themselves as Russian. And so these recent comments by the United States or United States personnel encouraging Ukraine to attack Crimea obviously is a big problem for Russia. Russia sees Crimea as vital to its strategic interests.
Daniel Kovalik, let's start off with the recent comments coming from a Russian spokeswoman, Maria Zakharova. Some of the comments there stating that basically the U.S. is now directly involved in the war. That was a notion that many probably agreed with prior to these statements. And also stating that basically Western allies, they're acting like madmen just wanting to get a win over Russia.
Yeah, well, I think it's very true. And I have thought that the U.S. has been involved in this war against Russia from the very beginning. And when I say the very beginning, certainly as far back as 2014, when the war by the government in Kiev against the Donbass began. And certainly they've insinuated themselves even further into this conflict. And, you know, when you talk about mad people running the show and engaged in insane conduct, I think one has to look at the destruction of the Nord Stream pipelines, which, as Seymour Hersh has revealed, and as many of us suspected from the beginning, the U.S. was involved in. It shows the U.S. will stop at nothing to try to undermine not only Russia, but frankly, its own allies in Western Europe. That attack on Nord Stream was the greatest and worst active environmental terrorism in known history. And again, it shows the lengths the U.S. is willing to go to in this conflict. And there are remarks, of course, by U.S. officials, which indicate the U.S. may even be willing to use nuclear weapons. And it goes beyond just providing weapons. We know from former Israeli Prime Minister Naftali Bennett that the West has directly interfered in attempts, even by Israel, to mediate a peace between Russia and Ukraine. The U.S. in particular and Great Britain do not want peace here, and they have done everything to derail peace talks. We know that Boris Johnson flew on a surprise visit to Kiev to tell Zelensky back in April not to sign a peace deal, that apparently there were at least an outline agreement on. And yeah, of course, the continued sending of weapons is only going to continue this conflict. It's not going to change the, you know, outcome of it. I think in the end, Russia will be victorious. But in the meantime, many Russians and many Ukrainians are going to die. And frankly, showing that the West doesn't really care about Ukraine or Ukrainians. They just want to fight Russia to the last Ukrainian, as people like Lindsey Graham have been open about.
All right, thanks a lot, gentlemen. Johnny Miller, of course, joining us from Donetsk. Also, thanks to Professor Daniel Kowalik joining us from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. With that, it brings us to an end here on this edition of the News Review.
Cost of living crisis in Europe has triggered fresh protests and strikes across the continent. In Spain, thousands of supporters of the public health system have protested in Madrid over what they're calling destruction of the public health system by conservative regional government. And in Portugal, thousands of teachers there have also held rallies in the capital, Lisbon, demanding higher pay and better working conditions. It was the third such protest in less than a month in the country.
Protesters have returned to major cities across Europe to voice their anger at the rising cost of living across the continent. In Spain, people held a massive rally in Madrid against what they call the regional government's dismantling of the public health care system. Officials say 250,000 people turned out, but organizers put the number as high as a million. That is the largest such demonstration in recent months. Protesters accuse the regional government of prioritizing private health. They say the public health service is suffering from staff and equipment shortages because of the government's policies. Some primary care doctors and healthcare workers have also been holding regular strikes over better working conditions and pay.
The condition of the public health system is deteriorating. The number of doctors have been decreasing with medical conditions getting worse. Many medical centers have been closed.
The region's right-wing leader has repeatedly claimed that the protesters are motivated by political interests. And in the Portuguese city of Lisbon, tens of thousands of teachers have taken to the streets amid public discontent over the cost of living crisis. It is the third time in less than a month that teachers and school workers have held mass demonstrations. Teachers want a pay rise and are also calling on the government to speed up career progression. Officials say negotiations with teachers' unions are ongoing and express hope that an agreement would be reached soon. Portugal is one of Western Europe's poorest countries, which is seeing decades-high inflation and is grappling with the cost of living crisis.
We are here to claim our rights, which were taken away from us a long time ago. Our careers have been frozen for a long time, and that can't be. We have the right to have a more dignified career. We can't work like this. It just can't be.
And in Germany, the travel sector has witnessed widespread chaos after major trade union called on airport workers to go on strike over pay. And in France, workers there have staged fresh protests and walkouts against the government's pension reform plans, which will raise the retirement age to 62, from 62, that is, to 64.
Protests in Spain and Portugal come as passengers across Germany have witnessed widespread travel chaos after a major trade union called on airport workers to go on a strike over a pay dispute. Verdi Trade Union called for the industrial action after it said collective bargaining efforts to settle wage disputes with the government failed. Since last year, European airlines have been facing labor strife amid staff shortages and soaring inflation, which have prompted employees to demand higher wages. German officials say despite a recent improvement, the economy is expected to suffer another mild decline in early 2023, as energy prices for households are still increasing. German consumer prices, harmonized to compare with other European Union countries, peaked at 11.6% in October, driven by the surge in energy prices and rising input costs. In the UK, more than 70% of UK households fear that they will be severely hit by the cost of living crisis in the first part of 2023, up from 54% at the end of last year.
Nobody actually wants to be on strike. We want to do our jobs. We want to look after the students here. This is what our passion is. But we've been driven into a situation where we can't even pay our bills now. So basically, we've been forced to do this. Nobody works in education to be rich. But we'd like to have a decent standard of life. And I think we're losing a lot of staff as well. A lot of people are leaving because of the pay.
Meanwhile, in France, police clashed with people protesting the government's pension reform bill. Hundreds of thousands of people attended the rally, which was held in a number of other cities across France, seeking to keep up pressure on the government over the reform plan, which aims to raise the retirement age from 62 to 64. President Emmanuel Macron says the reform is vital to ensuring the viability of the pension system.
We would like the age of retirement to remain the same. 62 is already enough for working people like us. We work in kindergarten in the way, and we don't see ourselves working with children at 64. It's already quite hard currently, and going farther isn't possible.
This is a democracy, and people only have a month to debate the pension reform. The government has kept its project hidden for months, despite the fact that it was ready, and they only yield on details when people take to the streets. Well, we will keep going.
The economic crises have been compounded by the protracted war in Ukraine. The war has pushed up prices, including the price of commodities like energy products. Furthermore, European nations have pledged billions of dollars worth of military aid to Ukraine. And that has sapped the capacities of European major economies to spend money on social welfare programs.
In Peru, the Congress has passed a constitutional complaint against former President Pedro Castillo to charge him for corruption. Approval of the complaint gives the green light to the country's AG, that's the Attorney General, to formally indict Castillo. Congress also backed complaints against two former ministers who served in the former government. And Castillo was ousted and detained in December after attempting to dissolve Congress to escape impeachment. And since then, Peru has been the scene of violent protests, which have left dozens of demonstrators dead. Protesters are calling for early elections, and they want to see incumbent President Dina Boluarte resign. Devastation, destruction, and despair, that's the picture in quake-hit regions of Turkey and Syria. But news of miraculous survival under the rubble of collapsed buildings can at times relieve people's pain and grief. A teenage boy and two men were found alive in Turkey after being trapped under debris for 11 days. While such rescues are becoming rare, operations to find survivors are still underway in impacted regions. Freezing weather, however, has frustrated efforts. Combined death toll from the 7.8 magnitude earthquake that jolted Turkey and Syria on the 6th of February has now topped 43,000. The natural disasters also injured and displaced thousands of people in the two countries. Our correspondent in Damascus, Mohammed Ali, says the biggest challenge in Syria's quake-devastated regions is providing shelter for those who have become homeless.
Already there are large numbers of people now displaced because of the collapses, because of fear of any future collapses. They need help, they need shelter. This is the most important issue and the biggest challenge for the Syrian government, perhaps, and the UN to find shelter, temporary shelter centers for this large number of people who are now displaced. There are hundreds of tragic stories now for people either who lost their homes, lost everything they have. There are some individuals who lost entire family members. So you can imagine how devastating the situation is. Going back to numbers, according to the Syrian Red Crescent, so far more than 224,000 aid items, whether food, medicine, or water, have been distributed to more than 172,000 people in affected areas, mainly Aleppo, Hama, and Latakia. Despite the fact that there are some countries providing support and aid, but much more is needed. And most importantly, lifting the sanctions on Syria, the U.S. and Western sanctions.
And that's it for your latest, everyone. Thank you for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
Congratulations to everyone on the occasion of 27th of Rajab, the Feast of Mab'ath, which marks the formal appointment of Prophet Muhammad by God for guidance of mankind. Arabi English Radio congratulates all Muslims on this auspicious occasion.
Limelight. Biden has maintained many of Trump's sanctions against Cuba. Cuba says Biden applies blockade even more aggressively than his predecessors. On November 3rd, for the 30th time, the United Nations General Assembly called for an end to the illegal U.S. blockade against Cuba. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. Truthout wrote in this regard, the current U.S. government, the one of Joseph Biden, of all those that the Cuban Revolution has known, is the one that has most aggressively and effectively applied the economic blockade. Carlos Fernandez do Cancio, Vice Minister of Foreign Affairs of Cuba, declared in a speech on December 14th, adding, "It is the one that punishes the most, the one that causes the most damage to the daily life of Cubans and the economy as a whole." Fernandez do Cancio cited the disruption of Cuba's fuel receipt by sea and the extraordinary flow of Cuban migrants as examples of the severe harms that Cubans have faced under the Biden administration's implementation of the blockade. In his address at a conversation series on Cuba in the Foreign Policy of the United States of America held on December 14th at the Higher Institute of the International Relations in Havana, Fernandez do Cancio took aim at the Biden administration's enforcement of the blockade against Cuba, stating, "There can be no doubt that the economic blockade is the defining factor in the bilateral relations between the United States and Cuba." Biden pledged during his 2020 presidential campaign that he would try to reverse the failed Trump policies that inflicted harm on Cubans and their families. In 2021, he claimed, "We stand with the Cuban people." But Biden's actions belie his words. Fernandez do Cancio said that Biden has applied with absolute and surprising loyalty the policy of maximum economic pressure that was designed by his predecessor, Donald Trump. Trump imposed 243 onerous new sanctions known as unilateral coercive measures in international law on Cuba as part of his maximum pressure strategy. More than 60 years ago, following the triumph of the 1959 Cuban Revolution, the U.S. regime imposed an economic embargo on Cuba. The rationale for the embargo was detailed in a State Department memo that advocated the disenchantment and disaffection of the Cuban people through economic dissatisfaction and hardship so they would overthrow the Fidel Castro government. The memo recommended the denial of money and supplies to Cuba, to decrease monetary and real wages, to bring about hunger, desperation, and overthrow of government. The embargo is not a single law, but a complex patchwork of laws, presidential proclamations, and regulations that Fidel Castro once called a tangled ball of yarn. American University professor and Cuba scholar William M. Leo Grand wrote in the National Security Archive, "It has evolved over the 60 years since President John F. Kennedy put it in place, loosening and tightening from one administration to the next, depending on the president's preference for using hard power or soft power in dealing with Cuba. Since the Cuban Revolution, the United States has waged an unceasing assault, both military and economic, against the Cuban people, organizing an invasion, assassinations, terrorist attacks against civilians, and systematic economic sabotage," Isaac Saini wrote at Resumen. "The blockade has cost Cuba more than $130 billion in damage, according to the United Nations." Fernandez do Castillo also mentioned the Biden administration's commitment in May to allow remittances to Cuba, but said that it still has not happened and there is no commitment to dismantle the measures announced by the Trump administration to disrupt the remittances. In addition, although the U.S. regime announced measures to boost internet penetration and interconnection in Cuba, the U.S. regime still prohibits access for Cubans to more than 200 private commercial websites, according to Fernandez do Castillo. This includes sites for education, health, science and technology, art, culture and innovation. The U.S. regime, Fernandez do Castillo stated, admits that it intends to promote the Cuban private sector, not to contribute to the development of the Cuban economy, not to improve the standard of the living of the population, not to help a majority sector of the population, but rather identifies it as an instrument of political subversion, a political weapon. Dozens of lawyers have signed an open letter to Biden stating there is no legal or moral justification for Cuba to remain on the state sponsors of terrorism list. They wrote, Biden has the power to remove Cuba from the list and reverse many Trump-era sanctions through executive action. However, Biden has chosen to defend Trump's aggressive policies. Trump also stiffened the economic and travel blockade and activated Title III of Helms-Burton Act, which was enacted to discourage foreign investments in Cuba. Trump's activation of Title III green-lighted the thousands of lawsuits that will discourage tourism and investment in Cuba. In one such lawsuit, U.S. District Judge Beth Bloom issued an order on December 30 against four Florida-based cruise shipping companies that sailed to Cuba, requiring them to pay more than $400 million in damages. Fernandez do Castillo pointed out that Biden could have suspended Title III like Trump's predecessors. Activating Title III has had a deterrent impact on our development purpose of attracting foreign capital, he added. In addition, the Biden administration could have ceased the practice of pressuring governments in Africa, Asia, and Latin America to refuse medical cooperation provided by Cuba, Fernandez do Castillo said, adding, this U.S. action, of course, is intended to prevent dozens of thousands of people from receiving medical services, which is what Cuban doctors provide. Biden could also have ended punitive measures, threats, and persecution against fuel exporting companies, shipping companies, port agencies, insurance and reinsurance agencies, all aimed at depriving Cuba of fuel supplies that our country requires to function, which has had an extremely severe impact on the economy and the lives of the Cuban people, according to Fernandez do Castillo. The blockade, the vice minister said, has an impact on everything that includes electrical service, transportation, the availability of medicine and material for medical services, and the ability to obtain supplies for food production and building materials. The U.S. government cannot pretend to treat Cuba as if it were part of its territory, or treat Cuba as if it were a colonial dominion, or treat Cuba as if it were an adversary defeated in a war. We are none of the three, Fernandez do Castillo declared. He cited Cuban President Miguel Díaz-Canel's observation that the intention of the U.S. regime is to strangle the Cuban economy and thus try to provoke social collapse and a political crisis in Cuba. Although the U.S. regime has failed in that purpose, it has led to economic depression in Cuba and the extraordinary flow of Cuban migrants. The embargo's overt purpose is to strangle the Cuban economy to promote regime change, according to the Alliance for Cuba Engagement and Respect, ACERE, a coalition of organizations working to end the Cuba blockade. The United States regime spends more than $25 million each year to fund regime change programs against Cuba. On November 3rd, for the 30th time, the United Nations General Assembly called for an end to the illegal U.S. blockade against Cuba. The vote was 185 in favor, 2 opposed, the U.S. and the fabricated regime of Israel, and 2 abstentions, Brazil and Ukraine. The resolution affirmed the sovereign equality of states, non-intervention and non-interference in their internal affairs, and freedom of international trade and navigation, which are also enshrined in many international legal instruments. Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
Back to reality.
It's the show where we discuss the most topical of topics, the most controversial of controversies, and the most important affairs of affairs.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. This is Back to Reality. I am Asma. I have the pleasure to be your host. And here with me, I have 2 very dear guests, Sister Bita and Brother Muzaffar. Both of you, welcome to Back to Reality.
Assalamu alaikum. My pleasure to be here.
Of course, the pleasure is all in here. Brother Muzaffar, shall we start with you? Please introduce yourself briefly, very much, what you study and...
I'm Muzaffar Haider from the UK. I've studied English literature and now I'm in the Hawza, in the Islamic Seminary.
That's very good. It's a pleasure to have you in here and wish you luck with your studies. You, Sister Bita.
Yes, I'm at your service. I'm Bita and I study medicine at one of the University of Tehran in Iran.
Now, I would start today's episode with one question. Do you consult with anyone in the special things you want to do in your life?
It was so harsh, you know, at the first place. But I don't like consulting with other people. I don't like it. It's a pressure.
I knew it.
They will judge you. This is my main problem.
So if you go for them to consult with them, they will judge you, right? Yeah.
And they will give you advice. I don't want your advice. I want your mindset. They cannot understand it.
So what if I'm giving you my mindset? I'm talking about my perspective.
Let's do an experiment here. Why don't you ask for some advice from the sister? Yeah. Let's see what happens.
They don't want to show you another perspective. Uh-huh. They want to force you, and they want to, you know, protect their mindset. This is my problem.
So when I say the word consultor to you, it means an advisor.
Yeah, exactly.
So what about you?
Do I consult people?
Yeah.
Consulting is a part of Islam. You have to consult people.
So when I mentioned the word consultant.
It's important who you consult. It has to be somebody who is aware of that subject.
Yes. Right?
So if you're having marital issues, you need to ask the... Never go to the in-laws. How about that? Yeah. You want to ask the, the...
Other people.
Marriage consultants, I guess. Or if you're having financial issues, you want to talk to somebody who's good at economics.
Yeah. So why do we feel that consulting with other people is just like the way Sister Vita puts it?
I don't know. That's why I was asking for examples. I'm curious to see, like, what do you mean? Like,
you know, I'm from that kind of person who won't try everything. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm going to go through that experience. I want to do it myself. It doesn't matter what is the consequence of what I'm doing.
You've never asked me for advice. You might like my advice.
Thank you. Oh, my gosh. You have to experience some special things yourself. Mm-hmm. You cannot always lean on other people. But sometimes consulting is a good thing, but not with the people from the old generation.
Oh,
what are we talking about? It depends. Hold on. It depends.
Yeah.
You know, they've got so much age, so much experience. They've seen the world. They've seen their whole families grow up.
So what? Most of their families have
died. Let me just make it clear for you. I want to start a new trade, for example, as a young person. Then I go to my parents, and then I go to my siblings.
Right.
Then my parents would tell me, don't do that. It's risky.
Mm-hmm.
You might lose all the thing that you have invested in all these years.
Right. And your siblings would say?
But then my siblings would say, go for it. It's a new thing. You might ace it.
Mm-hmm.
So you see, there is a big difference.
Yeah, but...
So these people who are in my age would encourage me to go for risky things.
Yeah, exactly.
Therefore, I would go for them because they know what I need.
That's different, though, because who you really should have consulted is the person who's in business.
Mm-hmm.
If one of your parents is in business, that's
yeah,
what
I wanted
right?
to mention that. There are two points here. First of all, the person you are going to go to consult with is the person who knows you. They have to know your persona, your personality, your mindset, and so on. And also, they have to know the work or, I don't know, the content you are going to consult
so
about.
So how come my parents who have nurtured me all these years, they don't know my personality. And then the other guy just studying psychology
This is the problem. I have it. Yeah, I know.
I won't trust somebody who is a stranger, who does not know anything about my life, about the...
what do you mean? Hold on. When you are sick, right, you don't go to the doctor and say, but you don't know me.
No, look,
we're talking about expert advice.
I guess you didn't understand what we say.
No, you've got to give me an example. An example which is so personal that it's making her
frustrated. I gave you a very clear and vivid example. I gave it to you.
Yeah,
yes, true. In that point where you said you should go and meet a specialist, like in trade, I do believe in that.
You should ask the specialist in trade.
Yeah.
Your parents aren't going to give you good advice because your parents are going to always be looking out for what's best for you.
But
they're just worried about you all the time.
Of course.
And plus, your parents are always going to think that you're an idiot. It doesn't matter what you do in your life. I've got three kids of my own. But when I talk to my dad, he's like, you don't know anything. Right? So it doesn't matter, right? They're the worst people. Astaghfirullah. If there's any parents listening, I'm really sorry. But this is kind of a reality.
Yeah, it is.
I'm saying when you're asking advice, it has to be from the right people. Full stop.
We're telling the same thing. And I'm going to tell you that, the specialist in the trade, for example, doesn't know her that much to, for example, consult her. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You have to know the personality of someone. For example, you know someone, you know that person doesn't have the talent to go to business.
And tell you something.
This is important.
Tell you something. All these great people who have done great things in this world, not all of them have been to consultants.
Exactly. Sometimes you have to choose by your own.
They usually
this
have
is all
someone,
about choices, you know?
Someone of their close circle that has been a consultant to them. So
I'd say
just
maybe,
think about it.
Maybe
Let's go for a break and then we'll
right.
see your answers.
Okay.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Back to Reality.
Sister Bita and Brother Muzaffar are here, and we're talking about consulting.
Consult.
Yeah, consulting with other people.
Awful word.
I don't want to sound too much like what Sister Bita just said. There have been times where I've asked advice and then I've gotten advice and it's just been the wrong advice.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
And then I'm like, well, I should have just gone with my gut instinct or, you know, I do a lot of consultation with Allah. I go to the Quran a lot. I read the Quran a lot. I contemplate a lot. I go to the Hadith a lot.
Whenever I go to shopping with my friend, then I ask her which color or which type, for example. And then she tells me this color. And then I pick the other color. And then she tells me, why did you ask my idea? Why did you do that? The same thing happens in real life.
It helps.
We usually ask the advice of other people. And then we go for the thing that we have in mind.
Yeah.
You know, but also there is a problem here. I think we have to consult in some content, like, I don't know, some business science.
Of course, yes.
But when it comes to, I don't know, therapy and some spiritual things, it's another story.
You know what I would say? I would say, go and have a research. I would love to call it gaining information.
This perspective
I would
is
ask my uncle about something. I would ask
Hang on. You're agreeing with it? That's what I said. You have to consult with others when it comes to sciences, when it comes to trade, when it comes to professional things.
Yeah. But, you know, something which sounds really bizarre and weird to me is that people pay money and they pay cash to that person to talk to them, consult with them. I cannot handle this.
Yeah.
Come on. They don't get paid bucket loads of money just for sitting there and doing nothing. They know what they're doing.
I'm not sure.
But I am telling
you. And some people really need it. They have serious psychological issues and they need to get out of it. I want to talk to a friend who's going to listen to me and hear my problems. That's a different thing.
Yeah, I know.
But when we're talking about psychological issues, this person has deep, deep-rooted psychological issues. His, I don't know, like something terrible happened to him or, I don't know, something which made him or her have really deep psychological issues. She can't talk to a friend. He can't talk to a friend. They need professional help.
I think this is an extra need here.
Schizophrenics.
Because of business.
For example, schizophrenics. Yeah. We've strayed into some dark area. Yes. Schizophrenics, they literally hear voices. Right?
Yes,
they literally hear voices in their heads. And,
but would they get cured?
No. So modern medicine doesn't have a cure for it.
So what's the use of going to a psychologist?
I think to a certain extent, those psychologists or specialists, they just help them how to function in society,
Exactly, because of the reason that I know that these sort of people, schizophrenic people, are not going to get cured. That's why I don't believe in psychologists doing anything to mental issues, you know? Unless that person...
It's an interesting discussion because it's a very Western phenomenon.
Yeah.
And a lot of people in the East will think, well, what's the point of it? And these, like depression, for example.
Yeah.
Like when we say depression, we're just throwing the word around. But in the West, it's an actual clinical disease.
It's so chronic,
and it's like got its fingers into every pie in the society.
See, I'm so much interested in psychology, about knowing about it, about the conditions. But believing in psychologists working as a person who would cure the issues, no.
The problem is that so much of modern psychology is actually just based on Freudian ideas.
Yeah.
And he was just, you know, he had a lot of bizarre and outdated ideas. But
so
it's
I
still
guess
based
now
on
we
that.
Are totally deviated from the standard of our discussion. We were talking about consulting and we just got here.
Let me add something. It doesn't matter that you are a consulting or it is a psychologist. It's a human being. And I think this mindset of that person who you are consulting with is a human being like you bothers you at the time of consulting.
That's the point.
Exactly. Because
he or she is just like me.
Exactly.
They're not going to add anything to my knowledge.
This mindset is the main root of not going to consult with other people.
Yeah.
At least for me.
Yeah. That's why I call it gaining information. I don't call it consulting with other people.
Psychology also, like child psychology, it deals with how the child's brain develops, how thinking itself develops, how does a child view the world. And through that, if you carry that on throughout the rest of life, you'll understand a little bit about how human beings interact, why they go into depression in the first place.
That's what I'm saying. I say it's good for every single society to make this study, psychological studies, as a rule for every being. You know, even in a school, they must teach a student about psychology. Because if I, as a person who's living in this society, know about some psychological issues, that might help me in future in how I would react to other people, how I would make even decisions, and even recognize my own mental issues. Mm-hmm. Because every single one of us is suffering from something.
Mm. Of course. Yeah. We all have some disorders.
So I think if we go for these studies, it's better, way better than going to the psychologist himself or herself.
Mm. But it takes a lot of energy and time.
Yeah. But still, it's fine.
Most of people don't do that.
Inshallah, may Allah never put us in a position where we need to pay somebody to hear our problems and, you know, take advice from them. Mm-hmm. May Allah never put us in positions where we have to consult somebody.
When we have to. No,
but consulting friends before you do a decision or... What's wrong
maybe
with that?
A good thing.
Sometimes, right? It's a
sometimes
good thing.
Right, but you know, again, this problem that person is just like me. They're not complete in the decisions they make. Maybe they are, I don't know, more logical than me. Maybe whatever. Somebody, you know, because some people are too emotional. They cannot make perfect decisions. In these occasions, maybe you can go to other people and ask them for logical and sound.
I'll give you an example. So before you marry somebody, they say that you have to consult the family, right? Yeah. Islamically, you're supposed to consult the family and find out about the family that you're going to be marrying into. And I think it's similar with trade as well. Before you take a trading partner, you're also supposed to kind of investigate a little bit and find out and consult others about it.
Yeah. So it's not bad in all the way. Generally speaking, it's a good thing. And we have to learn how to do it, how to believe it, how to accept it, and go for the right ones, for the best ones.
Let me tell you the point. This is not about being true or false.
Yeah.
You have to go for the variety of mindsets.
Exactly. Yeah, that's the point.
And then you can choose what to do.
Yeah, go for a variety of information, seek knowledge, and then you make the best
decision.
They're
not going to decide in place of you.
Yeah, that is.
That's
so thank you, both of you. It was such a pleasure to be with you both. And thank you to our listeners. This was all the time for today's Back to Reality. I hope you enjoyed it. Until another session, I bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Ya Allah, Ya Rabb al-Alamin, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahim, Ya Rabbi, let the Ummah rise again.
Ya Allah,
Ya Rabb al-Alamin, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahim, Ya Rabbi, let the Ummah rise again. Let us see daylight again, once again.
In the limelight.
In the latest jab over aerial surveillance, China says high-altitude balloons from the United States had flown over Chinese airspace without permission more than 10 times since the start of last year. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. China's Global Times has covered this story and tells us more. U.S. high-altitude balloons have illegally flown over Chinese airspace on more than 10 occasions without the approval of the relevant Chinese authorities since January of 2022. And the first thing the United States should do is to reflect on its own behavior instead of slandering, smearing, and provoking confrontation. The Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson, Wang Wenbin, said on Monday, 13th of February, at a regular press briefing. An unmanned Chinese civilian airship's unintended entry into U.S. airspace was due to force majeure, and the incident was totally an accident, according to Wang Wenbin. China firmly opposed the U.S. use of force to attack the Chinese unmanned airship, which was indiscriminate use of force and an overreaction, said Wang. For a long time, the U.S. has abused its technological advantages to carry out large-scale indiscriminate clandestine operations and stealing of secrets across the world, including from its allies, violating the sovereignty and interests of other countries and regions, and violating international laws and basic norms of international relations, Wang Wenbin said. The U.S. is deservedly the world's largest repeat offender for spying and use of surveillance equipment, Wang noted. The U.S. has also frequently sent aircraft and warships to conduct close reconnaissance in China. With 657 flights in 2022 and 64 flights in the South China Sea in January of this year alone, which seriously jeopardized China's national security and undermined regional peace and stability, the Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson said. It is also common for U.S. balloons to illegally enter other countries' airspace, Wang Wenbin noted. China's handling of the matters is responsible and professional, the Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson said in response to a question over how China responded to U.S. high-altitude balloons illegally flying over Chinese airspace on at least 10 occasions. The Reuters news agency has also covered this story and tells us more. China said on Monday, 13th of February, that U.S. high-altitude balloons had flown over its airspace without permission more than 10 times since the beginning of 2022, widening a diplomatic row after the U.S. military shot down what it says was a Chinese spy balloon. Since last year, the U.S.'s high-altitude balloons have undergone more than 10 illegal flights into Chinese airspace without the approval of the relevant Chinese authorities, the Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson Wang Wenbin said at a regular press briefing in Beijing in response to a question. Wang Wenbin did not specifically describe the balloons as military or for espionage purposes and did not provide further details. Asked how China had responded to such incursions into its airspace, Wang Wenbin said its response had been responsible and professional. The U.S. Defense Department, the Pentagon, did not immediately respond to a request for comment. China's assertion comes after the United States shot down what it says was a Chinese spy balloon off the coast of South Carolina on 4th of February, after it had drifted across the continental United States for about a week. In response to the Chinese balloon, the United States postponed a visit to Beijing by Secretary of State Anthony Blinken. China says the balloon was a civilian research aircraft that had mistakenly blown off course and accused the United States of overreacting. The first thing the United States should do is to look at itself, to change its ways, and not to smear and incite confrontation, Wang Wenbin said. In recent days, the U.S. military have shot down three other flying objects over North America. The Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson, Wang Wenbin, said he had no information on the latest three objects shot down by the United States. Russia's Sputnik news agency has also covered this story and tells us more. On 4th of February, the United States shot down what it claimed was a Chinese surveillance balloon over the Atlantic Ocean. China insists the airship was engaged in scientific research and had been accidentally blown off course. US-made balloons have been detected carrying out incursions into China's airspace at least 10 times since January of 2022, according to China's foreign ministry. It is not unusual for US balloons to illegally enter other countries' airspace. The US needs to reflect upon its own behavior instead of slandering, smearing, and provoking confrontation. The Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson Wang Wenbin stated at a regular press briefing in Beijing on Monday, 13th of February. In response to the US rhetoric following the recent balloon incident, the spokesman for the Chinese Foreign Ministry indicated that China reserved the right to take necessary means to deal with relevant incidents. The fact that a Chinese civilian unmanned airship carried out an unintended incursion into US airspace was due to unavoidable accidental circumstances, Wang Wenbin added. The shooting down of the balloon, which China insists was engaged in scientific research but fell victim to high winds, was denounced by the ministry as indiscriminate use of force. As for the United States, it was described by the Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson as the world's largest repeat offender when it came to spying and indiscriminate use of surveillance. Washington has repeatedly sent aircraft and warships to carry out reconnaissance missions over China, with 64 flights in the South China Sea in January of this year alone. The Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson Wang Wenbin underscored, adding that this seriously jeopardizes China's national security while also undermining regional peace and stability. China's response to US high-altitude balloons illegally flying over Chinese airspace was at all times responsible and professional, Wang Wenbin added.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz, and in southern Africa by a shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sador Bat 5 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.